Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Craig Sicanti, president and CEO of T-Minus Solutions, a tech-focused consulting startup for early stage and growing companies. Also a co-founder of Pino's Palette and mobile ordering company Seats, Craig joins the show today to share both his franchise and tech startup experience, as well as the opportunities he sees for entrepreneurs in Houston. Craig, thank you for joining me today.
Hey, good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we have a lot to talk about. You've got such an interesting career, and I think we'll start with the start and tell me a little bit about Pino's Palette and how that company came to be and how, you know, you ended up franchising it.
Yeah, Pino's Palette started for me. Mom brought my brother and I to a painting class, and this was 2004. We didn't want to go because we wanted to go drink with our friends. So we thought we'd show Mom, and we brought a cooler beer with us and got drunk at the painting class. And this was 2004. So I left there actually pretty impressed with what I painted, and we had a blast, and my family had a blast. So when I moved to Houston after Katrina, this was 05, I started to look for places like it because I thought I'd make a great date night. And it wasn't until my roommate got married, Charles Willis, to Beth Willis, that she said, this is an excellent girls' night out idea. Forget about the date night stuff. This is girls' night out. And she looked for something. We couldn't find anything like it. And we started it in 09 with our very first location that's still there in Montrose on Taft Street. And it just started to blow up. After a few months, we were basically terrible at everything retail, everything e-commerce. It was just all learning hard knocks. We opened our second location and then began to be pestered by customers and other people about franchising. So then I was like, okay, we got to go learn the franchising thing. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of people in Houston that know a lot about franchising. So we had to learn that all hard knocks and began franchising pretty heavily in 12. We got up to opening, I think about 30 locations in 15, 16. So at the height, I think we're about 150, 140 locations. Obviously the pandemic has done quite a number on our business, but we're still kicking strong at about 80, 85 locations all over the US. And it's been just quite a wild ride.
Yeah, I think listeners might be familiar with the concept. It's so fun. I've done it plenty of times over the years. It's like a great girls' night. It could be a good date night. I feel like people were looking for and are always looking for those kind of unique experiences. But I was wondering, through the founding process of Pino's Palette, but also the franchising process, what sort of challenges did you face?
Probably too many to cover. I'll give you some highlights. You know, we really messed up a lot of stuff. Franchising is tough. And, you know, we see it a lot of times, especially in retail. You open a shop, a bike shop, whatever the shop is, and you get good at it. Could be a chocolate bar shop. And because you're an incredible baker, and now you want to franchise it, which makes sense many times for a growth model. But you're now in a whole nother league. Franchising is about, it's a lot more like a consulting agency than it is being a baker. So you have to learn about putting training materials together. You have to be really good at supply chain, because that becomes a big part of the business. Technology becomes a big part of the business because it's the backbone. You can codify processes to the day-to-day that the franchisees use. So now you're thrust into becoming an expert in all of these things, including the EQ, the emotional intelligence part of it, which is a big part of consulting, is being able to explain the why behind why you should do something. Franchisees are not your employees, so you can't just say, do it or I'll fire you. You have to really coach them on why they should do it and invest more of their own money. So those are really some of the big challenges when you think about getting into franchising. I think also to dispel another myth is it's cheaper. You know, there's still a lot of cash. You know, if you want to really franchise and do it properly and put together the business in the box that people expect when they buy a franchise, even an emerging franchise, You probably need to spend somewhere between $200,000 to $500,000 to build that infrastructure properly, the brand standard guidelines, all of the training, video, all the tools and systems, the expert to help them open locations. You have to invest quite a bit in the infrastructure. Bootstrapping it can be a big recipe for disaster.
Yeah, that's such a great point that, you know, you are building this brand nationally, but it's through a franchise. So you don't have that like hands-on control. Like you said, it's not, they're not your employees. They're the owner, you know, the franchise owner. So that's interesting. And so, you know, how did this experience and facing these challenges and overcoming these challenges in your own personal career, how did that lead you to start T-Minus Solutions?
Yeah, good question. So I think like many people in 2020 during the pandemic, we're all like, okay, we're at home, locked up, doing our job, doing whatever we're doing, and taking a step back and thinking about what am I really passionate about? What do I love doing? So through Pino's Palette, we built all our own proprietary software systems, which with my background as a computer scientist, it was pretty natural for us to do, but still hard to manage a one-person software shop. So we had a software developer on staff that turned over about every 18 months. They would move on to some other gig. And it was very hard to manage and keep going. And the firms in town that we would constantly try to outsource to, they love working for Exxon and Schlumberger and million-dollar projects. Pino's Palette's a very small thing that might warrant their new grad. But so it just became a big challenge. And then working as a co-founder and an interim CTO and CFO at Seats, I ran into the same problem again. Here I am trying to do this startup. Outsourcing some of this becomes real challenging. Freelancers can be unpredictable. And overseas can be quite unpredictable. So hard to deliver on time and on budget. So as I step back and talk to my mentors, and by the way, I got out of the day-to-day of Pino's Palette in late 2019. So I stepped down as CEO and we replaced myself there. I was having the discussion, you know, what do I love to do? And as I'm writing down on paper, I love technology as much as I've tried to get away from it. I love it, solving businesses. I love mentoring other entrepreneurs. Those were two of my big factors. So starting a consulting agency where we could help startups and mid-sized growth companies build custom software was kind of my perfect unicorn. And that's when we started T-Minus. So November of 2020 was when we got started.
Yeah, I think a very popular phrase right now is, you know, the world that we're in, every company is a tech company now, whether or not your actual skill set or your service or product that you're delivering is technology, you still have to have technology as a part of your company. So I think that's a very interesting conclusion you came to and seeing this opportunity here. So tell me a little bit about the types of companies you're both working with already and hope to work with T-Minus Solutions. What specifically the solutions you are providing them?
Yeah. At the heart of it, this really just started with sitting down to have coffee. You know, I love talking with someone, especially if they're not deep-seated or technology or have that background, just to be a sounding board. You know, I'm a cup of coffee or a beer away from just being a free sounding board for those things. Some of them turn out to be custom software solutions that make sense to build. My team's really passionate and we have a lot of expertise in more consumer touching and focused things versus highly industrial stuff. So a lot of the projects we get on will have some consumer facing app, everything from, you know, telemed for retail medicine to, we just launched a social media app for recovering alcoholics and drug addicts called Sober Connection. That was a great community impacting project. So we really gravitate to brands like that, especially with consumer focus. It's something we really like to work on, especially if it has a community impact. We definitely recruit on the fact that our staff are going to be working on things that are going to have some community impact or consumer touch. It's pretty rewarding to work on things like that. And again, they're either startups like Sober Connection, or they're growth companies. We work with a Rice alumnus out of Washington called Vegetable and Butcher. And they deliver prepackaged, pre-made gourmet meals to your home every other day. So, you know, and there I put them in the growth category.
That's funny. I always love when I come across startups that are also working with other startups. Like it's such a cool connection because you're both a startup and you're helping.
That's right.
So where are you and where is T-Minus Solutions in this startup journey? You know, how big is your team? Have you fundraised already? Are you looking to fundraise, et cetera?
Yeah, we've self-funded so far. So we have a team of six. That includes my wife, head of HR, as sometimes you have to do. We are looking at accelerating growth and potentially bringing on some investors to grow a little quicker. But yeah, we are full on startup. I keep telling my wife this is my last startup. funny sidebar is when we were starting T-Minus, we were also thinking about building a house. I said we could only do one or the other, and she's like, "Well, you're really good at startups, so this should be easy, right?" And I said, "Yeah, well, we have three kids. Would a fourth be easy, or is it still a kid?" And I remind people embarking on startups, you know, even though you've done it a few times, you still have to change diapers and do everything a new baby has, you know, requires. So yeah, we're going through the growth pains, and with many of our clients, we share some of those war stories, and are a lot of times a little extra patient with each other, because we know, like, we're going to make mistakes as a startup company. We don't have everything perfect. I don't think any company ever will. So I think there's a little grace given. And then as a founder, you know, I can help them in many other regards. You know, I can spend an hour on the phone talking about sales tax, just like I can talk about, you know, software code.
That's so interesting. You're kind of like a full package for the companies you work with. And that's a great point too. And we're definitely going to pick your brain with some more startup advice, because I know you've got lots. But yeah, so big picture with T-Minus, what do you see the peak opportunity for T-Minus? What would you see? What would you hope the company is at in like 5 years, 10 years down the road?
Yeah, I mean, we hope to grow, but you know, as a passion project, you know, revenue is not our sole driver. I think the bigger thing is what projects we're involved in. You know, again, back to the passion and our vision is to, you know, our statement is to empower entrepreneurs. Whether they're in the startup phase or in the growth phase, we want to make the accessibility to technology easy for them and have a trusted technology partner they can come to and say, "Hey, Craig, should I build this thing?" I'd say about half the time I get asked that question, I say, "No, you shouldn't. You should go rent and let us help you evaluate vendors, because we know how to do that too pretty well." So, you know, that's more of a measurement of success. I did poll the team, like, what's your dream projects? Obviously, as a company named T-Minus, anything in the whole space and aeronautics realm is big. We're a group of space nerds, and that hence the name of T-Minus. So those are some dream projects for us. But I think mostly just to be able to impact the community with different community focused or consumer focused projects is where we really love to be.
So you mentioned starting up seats with their team, Aaron and Marshall, who I know very well, and it's very exciting to see how they've expanded the concept into My Eat. So tell me a little bit about how you got started with them and the expertise you specifically brought to the table.
Yeah, you'll probably see a trend here from being from Louisiana. A lot of the businesses I get into start over a beer. And I remember being at a New Year's party with Aaron. I think this was 2017 New Year's. After a few beers, he told me about the idea that he and Marshall had. Evidently, Marshall went to the World Series, had just gone to the World Series, and I had enough beers to say, "I can build that for you. Let's go to my office and whiteboard it." And so we just went and whiteboarded it. You know, nothing really talked about from a partnership or business perspective, just to help them get their idea around an MVP and really narrow it down. That's the biggest challenge in tech is, how do I narrow it down to an MVP, because software can get expensive real quick. So I brought that experience. You know, how do we build a product like this that can really be enterprise and scalable, and obviously deliver on time for someone like the Texans, which was one of the first clients. I brought that to the table, as well as just a general business understanding, helping them stay organized in the fundraising aspect So, you know, I served as their interim CFO and CTO there. Cause there's just so much, there's so much to do when you're starting a company. I was able to help in those arenas. And, as I talked about with Aaron and he'll attest, I was like, I'm a diva. You don't want me working here for very long. Let me get you to kind of the first, second full version and through the second fundraising round. And then I helped them hire in a full-time CTO, which is kicking butt and doing things I could have never done for the company. Hence the movement in the hospital and my eats. They have an incredible team in place now.
That's awesome. I mean, it's such a very cool, like Houston origin story, of how you guys got together and built that. Do you have like, are you like a board member, or are you kind of just, hang around the office sometimes?
I still retain the titles of co-founder, and I'm a board member.
Okay, yeah. Great. As you mentioned, you know, you've got this various, you know, startup experience under your belt, so much that you're writing a book about it. So tell me a little bit about, you know, how you decided to start this book and what can people expect when it comes out?
Yeah, hopefully don't set the expectations too high. You know, I'm a teacher by nature. I love to teach in general. So, you know, when I get that call, hey, I'm thinking about building the software as a new idea, or I have a business and I'm thinking about adding this opportunity, whether it's a SaaS program, you know, I go out and have coffee and then I want to just pour all this into their head. So I'm like, at least if I write a book, I can give it to them in a form that they can go and digest even after that coffee meeting has happened. So if anything, it serves the purpose of just giving the cliff notes of the stuff we've learned and I've learned at Pinos Palette and Seats, and then helping others, many are clients, going through those early stage processes of fundraising. What do I build and what do I not build? Who should my first hires be? How do I get traction? You know, covering a lot of those topics. I think I've fallen in the same trap that I advise new startups not to do, which is to overthink it. You know, perfection is unachievable and will just get you working on a project for a year with no traction or results. And that's kind of happened to me with this book. I need to stop editing and just release it and then iterate as I learn new things, because it's an ever shifting place, and Houston's so dynamic in its own right. It's hard to even keep up with some of the trends on what certain things are called, where should you go to raise capital? I mean, that's changing. You could rewrite a book on that every year.
I feel like you mentioned, you know, just having that initial conversation and that beer, that coffee where you share some tidbits, but it's like, it's overwhelming the amount of information you need as a startup founder. So to just have that download by way of a book in your hand, at least, I can see that being helpful, because I'm sure in a 30 minute or an hour coffee meeting with you, that person's leaving with just like their head buzzing, you know, like they're just like, oh no, which one, what did he say about that and that? So that's very interesting. So, and you do have, like you mentioned, this teaching nature, you mentor at Rice too. So when you do have an entrepreneur approach, you are aspiring entrepreneur, what would you say, you know, your top piece of advice, whether they're, you know, wanting to start a franchise company or a tech startup, what little tidbits do you start with?
Yeah, you know, I have five, and then some extra kind of bonus ones. You know, one is, I think fundamentally entrepreneurship can be a career, and that's how I've approached it. You know, going through Rice, a lot of guest speakers, you hear these big glory stories of like, I mortgaged my house, and almost like they went to the casino and won. And I think there's a way, and many good entrepreneurs approach it in way of a more of a calculated and career fashion. And I'm definitely more risk adverse than many of the entrepreneurs I know from that regard. And you got to find your own style. Along with that, you know, you got to keep your radar on to find the problems. Like, I want to be an entrepreneur, but you have to constantly be thinking about, okay, what are the problems and challenges people are facing day to day to find that opportunity? Building a strong network of other entrepreneurs is really key. You know, your mom and dad or family are going to be more risk adverse. They're not going to want to see you blow your college or whatever your education and your career path to go start a painting class. They're going to be like, are you crazy? That's not, but another entrepreneur would be like, yeah, you should try it. You should try it quickly so you can get back to your job if it doesn't work out, but you should try it. So having a good network, learning how to do risk analysis on all the parts of a business is really key. And then, lastly, you got to play Monopoly. Like once you got all the pieces figured out, you got to go put your money up, get other people's money. Bootstrapping too much can be quite dangerous and almost impossible if you're doing a tech startup. You got to think bigger, much quicker. If anything, that was what I would go back and tell myself is go bigger, harder, faster.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's such a great point. Some people, I would have thought, your family would be blind to just like, cheerleaders, Like they're like, oh, you're going to do great or whatever. But yeah, no, they're also very close to, they know your financial situation. They know so they might be even a hard critic. They're nowhere in between. They're either like blind support or maybe a little too harsh, I guess.
Yeah. Sometimes, you have family that's been through it. They know the struggles of entrepreneurship and it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Sometimes it is staring in an abyss and eating glass, as Elon Musk said. If you've been through it, sometimes you don't want to see your baby go down that path. So, it's something you need to have a wide network to understand and give you feedback and charge forward. Lastly, like one thing, especially on the rapid startup side, whether it's a tech startup or not, when you get involved in this grind of fundraising rounds and the company's valued at $10 million or $5 million or whatever that is, not lose focus of the traction to the consumer. Even if your value is going up round after round, it can be distracting and it can take your eyes off what's most important, which is consumer traction. And that's one of the things I'd say about Houston. While it's not, the most incredible city to raise money in, Austin has bigger firms, but if you want to start a company, Houston's the best because any consumer population you want, you can find them here. Like if you have something to sell, as long as it's not surfboards, you can prove out that concept here in Houston, 100%. I mean, there's just so much demand here in every aspect, medical, industrial, fintech, you name it. There's consumers here to find your beachhead.
Yeah. Surfboard or snowboards, like neither thing would really sell well in Houston, but that's a good point. And I want to pick your brain a little bit about, starting a company in Houston specifically, but before I move on to that, I think, when we talk about entrepreneurship, we so have the mind of like a tech startup. That's kind of where our default goes, but there's a lot of business and growth opportunities in a franchise. So, maybe a company, even a tech company, that's looking to grow at a big, fast pace, that could be a really viable option for them. So, for someone who has a, early or mid-stage company looking to really ramp up and scale and might be considering franchising, what recommendation do you have in terms of resources and tips for them?
I wish I had a good list. That's going to be my second book is, the first one is A Founder's Guide to a Tech Startup, but the second one will be A Founder's Guide to Franchising. There's not a lot of great books I've read. I think, breaking it down to understand that you are licensing, franchising is a licensing contract and franchising is not the only way to go. Affiliate programs like CrossFit, there are a lot of other ways to license a brand and grow that way without franchising. So explore all of them. Speak to someone, whether it's franchising or not, like always find someone that's been 10 years down that road to talk to. There's nothing more than, someone with scar tissue. I mean, like, just like me or Aaron or Marshall, we love to share that scar tissue so that someone else doesn't have to go through it. So find that person. If you're thinking about franchising, hit me up. I'd love to help and have coffee or a beer, but that's really the best way to go. There are some, there is a great emerging franchisor conference. Go check that out. For $1,000 and a plane ticket to Miami or wherever it's being hosted. I think it's called Emerging Franchisors. They do a good rundown of everything that's involved in that kind of first 2 to 3 years, first 50 locations. give you a good taste of whether it's a good fit for growth.
Yeah, those are really great starting points. And I think you bring something up interesting too, like licensing just technology. I feel like that happens a lot in the beauty industry. You see technologies that are being licensed out to individual retailers and service providers. So definitely something to consider as well in that greater scaling journey. But yeah, let's go back to Houston a little bit, my favorite topic. And so, you know, so much of your career, all of your career has been, you know, based here and starting companies here. So, you know, people, whether they're a Houstonian looking to start a business or maybe someone moving to Houston to start their business, what do they need to know about Houston's kind of business economy for, you know, startups and entrepreneurs?
Yeah. Oh my God. Are you a Houston native?
Yep. Born and raised.
Awesome. Awesome. So yeah, I was a transplant. Some people call me a Katrina refugee, although I did move here for a little bit before. You know, Houston's vast economy is here. Obviously, unless you have a special niche good, you should be able to find consumers here even before you have a product, at least to just talk to, hey, if I built this thing, would you buy it? And that's a good place to start many times. I mean, just in the last, 08, just in the last 15 years, I mean, the ecosystem and support, I mean, first know that you're spoiled if you're just now starting an entrepreneurship in Houston. Because places like the Canon didn't exist, right? Like you wanted to start your first office space, you had to go sign a 3-year lease, even if it was on one room. Like we had to go do that at Boxer. So you have co-work, like really cool co-working spaces like the Canon that's available. There is infinite, I mean, Google or spend 5 minutes on the Facebook, Houston Startups Facebook page. Subscribe to Innovation Maps Daily thing. I mean, every day you get 3 interesting innovators to go look up. And I'd say maybe 20% of the time I call, email, or send them a message and they respond. Like Houstonians will respond to you. Hey, can I get coffee? Love to pick your brain on this thing. So start building the network. There's a ton of pitch competitions hosted all over. The Canon just had one. Ion has them, I think, every week or every other week. The ecosystem is riper than it's ever been. So, you know, just search a little bit on some of those opportunities, get plugged into the space so you can start building your network, which will be very helpful in whatever problem you're trying to solve.
Yeah, I love that. The idea that modern day Houston entrepreneurs are spoiled, because it's true.
So spoiled. So spoiled. I mean, when I was getting Pino's Palette, it was like I had one Rice professor to call, Al Napier. He just passed away. An incredible mentor of mine. And it was like, that was it. And who do you know? And he would connect people. And then he started an EO. There's the Houston EO. Rice has its EO. I know I'm not as plugged into U of H, but I know they have all of their support and they're nationally ranked. Rice is number one ranked in entrepreneurship for like the third year in a row. I mean, the stuff we have going on in Houston is mind-boggling. The money's following the medical district. There's a whole nother thing going on there. You know, for seats to be able to get plugged in with the Texans. I mean, and then you got the Astros here. I mean, everything's here to be successful. You just got to go get to work. It's only getting better. It's like every 6 months, something new is available for us. Green Town Labs, if you're working on green tech, I mean, what more do you want?
No, it's so true. What do you think? Because, you know, Houston is a relatively late developing innovation ecosystem. So many other major cities have already had this established innovation ecosystem concept. But what do you think makes Houston different? What's that like unique aspect about Houston that is going to set it up for, you know, success, even though it's, I don't know, quote unquote, late to the game of tech and innovation?
Yeah, I'll give you, I mean, I've already kind of talked about what I think makes it unique. So I'll remake that point and then say what I hope to really drive home in the future. You know, for me and T-Minus, we hope to be, you know, the 25-year plan is that we're at the epicenter for tech startups. We're helping think through that and potentially even creating a venture fund so that we can really help with everything they need. But Houston is really unique when you think about Dallas and Austin, even West Coast and Northeast, with the demand of our consumer base. you can test out anything. You can't say that about Austin and Dallas the same way you can about here. We have industrial, medical, consumer, people love retail. You got a restaurant concept. You're in the right place. Like if you can make it work here, it's going to do good. So that's what's really unique and awesome to see. I think what I like to make more unique is that we ramp up the loyalty, that we're specifically looking for companies founded here and are staying here. Too often we found companies here and then the money drives us out of Houston. So then you lose all that knowledge. The CEOs are now in Palo Alto versus having them stay here. And then, the ecosystem becomes bigger, stronger, faster, and is more iterative because people come out of those companies and start their own companies. So I'd like to really amp up the loyalty as well as the pay it forwardness of once you do succeed in Houston, hang around and then, find some people to mentor, and there's a lot of places to hang out to do that.
That's such a great point. And I know there are probably tons of people nodding along, listening to this, because at the end of the day, the term ecosystem does not mean just like a bunch of startups start and then leave. You know what I mean? It is a cyclical thing that we need to happen to really kind of call it an ecosystem. So that's a really great point. And yeah, like I said, I think a lot of people agree with that sentiment. So I think it's going to happen. It's a great reminder overall and some really great tidbits of advice. And it's been a pleasure really hearing your story straight from you. So thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciated it.
Thanks for having me. Great to, a little therapeutic, get to talk about some scar tissue and get excited about the future for Houston, which I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. Again, my favorite topic. So thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.